CBSi and the World, I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Bill Whalen of the Hoover Institution. He and his colleagues do the Goodfellas podcast, videocast, which I highly recommend, a conversation about the politics of the nation and the policy of the nation. Right now, however, Bill's here to help me understand the results from the California recall vote. Overwhelmingly for the sitting governor, Gavin Newsom, the field of not Democratic candidates are widespread. However, I want to look at not the fact that Gavin Newsom remains governor. I want to look at what this means for, one, the Republican Party of California. Bill writes a column for the Washington Post about this. And two, what next for Gavin Newsom? What does he do the day after he wins? Bill, a very good evening to you. Is there a Republican Party in California? There used to be with your mentor, Pete Wilson. Did it move to Arizona and Texas? Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, John. Boy, it sure seems that way. Nominally, there's a Republican existence in California. If you look at voter registration, Republicans still account for the second largest party in California, John, but it's a 22-point fall off from the Democrats. But I say the word nominally because in terms of organization, structure, and effectiveness in winning elections, the California Republican Party is kind of dead as a doornail. And, you know, I went back and I counted up every statewide election, John, in California going back to 2000. This is presidential, Senate, and state constitutional offices. Not including Arnold Schwarzenegger in races that did not have Arnold on the ballot, Republicans have lost 51 of 52 such contests, John. And I think even the Harlem Globetrotters have a worse winning record than that. So given what happened here last night in the recall election, I think it's time for us Republicans to do some soul searching and just kind of figure out why are we so bad at elections.
Are they really moving out of the state, Bill, or was that just a cheap turn for me? In other words, we hear all these stories about Californians in Montana, Californians in Texas. Are those Republican Californians or are they fleeing taxes? They don't care about the party.
It's a mixed bag, John. I mean, Elon Musk, who's famously moved to Texas, I don't think Elon Musk is a Republican. Other Democrats, you know, especially the tech guys who moved to Austin, Texas, young engineers, men and women, they're not Republicans either. But you do see Republicans moving into states like Utah and Arizona as well. But if you're going to have outward migration, you have to build from within. And the question is, why can't California Republicans grow the party? The growth in politics in California is by people who would rather not identify with Republicans or Democrats, what we call NPPs, John, which stands for no party preference. That's a fancier way of saying independents. So what happens to the Republican brand? And it's complicated, I think, for this reason, John. First of all, we're not putting forward very compelling candidates from here within California. But then secondly, John, you look at the national party, and the national party, with its very conservative politics, just don't play in a state that is predominantly Democratic.
You recommend traveling to Boston, maybe a committee of possible candidates from California. What can they learn in Boston?
So I looked at Massachusetts, John, because whereas California Republicans have lost 5 of the last 6 governor's races out here, most of them by double digits, so not even close, Massachusetts Republicans have won 4 of the last 6 gubernatorial races in that state. And this is the state, John, where Democrats account for 30% of the registration, but Republicans, John, only 10%. What's happened is Republicans there have smartly figured out that they have to appeal to the 54% or so part of the electorate, John, that is so-called undeclared. In other words, they're independents as well. They're unaffiliated voters. And so what you see is, for example, Mitt Romney, who, as we know, is a senator right now, a 2-time presidential candidate, a pretty conservative one at that. But before that, John, he was a very moderate governor of Massachusetts for 4 years in the early 2000s. That version of Mitt Romney was very much interested in doing climate change. That version of Mitt Romney, John, was a proponent of a health care law that he implemented that looked eerily similar to Obamacare. You remember, this became a problem when Romney ran for president against Obama. He had Romney care hung around his neck for that. You look at the current governor of Massachusetts, John, a gentleman named Charlie Baker. Charlie Baker also active on the climate change front, but Charlie Baker also very aggressive on the vaccine mandate front. And Charlie Baker, John, who at various points has been the most popular governor in America, more popular in Massachusetts than Dunkin' Donuts, which is saying something. But Charlie Baker not afraid to get into fights with Donald Trump. And whereas in California, you saw Larry Elder, who got the most votes on the recall side, was more than willing to be embraced with Donald Trump. You do not see that in other states. So if you're going to run in a blue state, I don't want to lay this too heavily on Donald Trump, but you have to find ways to disassociate with Mr. Trump and sort of the worst perceptions of Republicans.
June 29th, 1972, the opening of a movie with Robert Redford, a superstar. It was called The Candidate. It was directed by Michael Ritchie, written by Jeremy yes. Larner. I remember seeing it in a theater as a young person and thinking, this is joyful, except for the end of the movie, the last line mm-hmm. of the movie, in which our winner, the fair-haired candidate from working-class popular California, now has defeated the sitting silver-haired senator, and mm-hmm. he turns around and says, now what do we do? That is Gavin Newsom tomorrow. Now what do we do? He's got homeless, he's got wildfires, he's got what you'd have to say is an ongoing pandemic problem that is not solved, and he has a border that is porous with people who have needs. Now what does he do?
Well, you know, what's interesting, John, is the pivot for Newsom coming off of this, in which he's going to feel very cocky, very empowered, very vindicated of his record, if you will. I'm a recovering speech writer, so I always look at this in terms of what a speech would be like. And I can see Newsom standing before the state legislature in his state address early next year, saying that together we fought off this assault on democracy. Wild applause, because the legislature in California is overwhelmingly Democratic. But then, John, he'll probably offer lip service, and this is what I would write for him, saying, but to those of you who voted against me in the recall, hear me now. I understand your concerns. I want to work with you to build a better California. But the question, John, is he really, in terms of the concerns of voters in this election, did he really get the message? The good news about the recall election, if you are an opponent of Gavin Newsom's, is you forced him out of the bubble. You got him out of Sacramento. You got him to look at homelessness. You got him to look at dirty, crime-ridden streets in California. And you got him to at least publicly admit that there's a problem here. The question, though, is whether or not Newsom will continue to be that version of a governor, if he'll go back to his old self within the Sacramento bubble and what he used to call in his pursuit of progressive beliefs in California, the preview of coming attractions in America. So that's what I'm curious about this hour. Did Gavin Newsom really learn anything from this, or is he going to go back to being the Gavin who ended up getting, you know, ended up facing a recall?
If this was an existential threat to his career, he'd be stronger afterwards. So two parts. Right. Was it an existential threat or an exercise in social media publication? And two, is he stronger? Is he perceived stronger nationally now that Mr. Cuomo of New York has stepped aside momentarily?
The answers are yes and yes, John. He saw it as a threat. In late July, there was a poll that showed the recall running at about 50-50. Remember, it's a two-part question. Question one, do you recall the governor, yes or no? Question two, who do you vote for as a replacement? So that question, that first question, John, the yes or no vote, was running neck and neck. Newsom's people thought, my gosh, we could actually lose this thing. They got very busy. They raised a lot of money, and they spent a lot of money on television, making this into a national referendum. And then secondly, and this ties into his natural prospects right now, he's offering Democrats something of a roadmap at this hour, in that Newsom turned this election into a referendum on one thing, science, which is code language for vaccines. And in a state where about 85% of adults have been vaccinated, that's a good place to be. So he made this election about, if you believe in science and believe in vaccines, vote for me. If you don't, vote for the other guy, and good luck. In fact, I think the exact words he used in that were, it's a matter of life and death. So you're going to see in a Virginia governor's race, which is coming up this November, John, but voting begins a week from now, the same topic. The same approach. The Democratic candidate, Terry McAuliffe, running to get back the job he once had, governor of Virginia. He is making himself very pro-vaccine, and he's trying to make his Republican opponent anti-vaccine. So at this hour, Democrats think that now there's a winning strategy for 22 and has tried to make everything turn on vaccines. The caution I would offer here, John, is yes, it worked in California, but again, we're talking about a state that doesn't elect Republicans and where the advantage in voters is 2-1 in terms of registration. I think you go to Florida, you go to Texas, you go to Arizona and Sunbelt states, it becomes a tougher argument for Democrats.
And finally, Bill, 30 seconds. Was the president on the ballot rhetorically?
The president showed up the day before the election. They did a rally in Long Beach for him. I think this was about Joe Biden associating himself with a positive outcome for Democrats. The president's had a very bad spring and summer, the economy, the border, Afghanistan, and the White House needed a win. So I think that's why they flew him out to the other side of the country, just to associate him, just to associate the president with what would be good news for Democrats. He really had nothing to do at the end of the day. Barack Obama was probably no influential because he appeared in ads that Joe Biden didn't. But for the Biden White House, they could just show the pictures of him with Gavin Newsom and say, look, we helped. We
right,
did it.
Right.
But that's what White Houses do.
Bill Whalen, the Hoover Institution. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.